2008, Lecture 17. And it's Lecture 17, right? Not the discussion? That comes after lunch, right? Okay. So Lecture 17. I am the proverbial horse. I can be led to the concept, but I must take the concept and run with it, making it mine. All literature is 99% fantasy and 1% apparent fact. I write the story of my life daily in how I instruct my stem cells to function in my mind and body, in my world and universe. I stop reading fiction and read the story of my life thus far and delight in its magic. All of us have the opportunity of living a spectacular life. We live a spectacular life not because of where we live, but because of who we are. And if you believe that you are an outstanding person, if you believe that you're fabulous, that you are talented, that you are able to do whatever you want to do, then you can do it. However, if you don't believe that you're fabulous and you're talented, even that which you can do, you can't do. I have worked with many musicians and many actors, and they would get stage fright. Now you say, why would they get stage fright when they're an actor, a musician, they're a performer, they're used to performing? Well, can anyone tell me what made them have stage fright? Yes.
They lost trust in
themselves. What?
No confidence in themselves.
They had lack of confidence. Mm-hmm. Why did they have lack of confidence? When you're at home in the bathroom, standing in front of the sink, in front of the mirror, and you're speaking and you're singing, do you have a lack of confidence? Why?
Because you're alone.
You're doing it for yourself. You have a lack of confidence when you do it for somebody else. Because you never know how they're going to respond to what you do. And as long as you're going to go around the world doing things for other people, that is, performing for other people, then you will be a very poor actor. You'll be a very poor performer. Musicians get up and perform their music because it's their love, their heart, their being. They perform it and it expresses who they are. They don't care if anybody listens or not. They will give as good a performance in an empty house as they will to a full house, because they're performing for themselves. And when little children are taught how to perform for themselves in front of a mirror, and you see, now, make a happy face, make a sad face, make a big, you know, pretty soon they're doing it all the time and having a lot of fun, but they're performing for themselves. Then when it comes time to perform, in fact, they can do it very easily, because they never did perform for somebody else. So they think that they're performing for themselves when they're on stage, performing before other people. If we would like to have success in every area of our life, we want to learn how to perform for ourselves. Be our very best, our personal best. And the way to be our personal best is to recognize that we already are. Now, I am the proverbial horse. I can be led to the concept, but I must take the concept and run with it to make it mine. Now, the concept we're speaking about right at the moment is the concept of self-confidence. Now I say, you need more self-confidence, you need more self-confidence, you need more. And you say, all right. What do I do to get it? You know, how do I get self-confidence? Well, you like yourself. Yeah, sure, that's easy said. You know. You like yourself. You do things that are nice for yourself. Yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. But then you say to them, hey, there's some little kids over here, and they're kind of sad. Can you go over and brighten their day? And the person will say, sure. Now you gotta be real happy, real nice, put on your clown nose and all that good stuff. So here this person, who could not perform before a group of people, goes over and performs before the children. And what happens while he's performing before the children? He is having fun. He is being himself. He is being a silly person. He's being a clown. He's not thinking that the children are judging him. He's only thinking that he's having fun. He gets up on stage and he thinks the audience is judging him. And of course they are. If we think that they're judging us, they are judging us. But if we think they're not judging us, they don't judge us. The audience only judges when we think they judge. Our wife only loves us when we think she loves us. Our husband only loves us when we think he loves us. Not before or after. And if you don't love your wife, she knows it right away. You could never tell her in any uncertain terms. She knows it. And then, if all of a sudden you take a switch and you start loving her, and for whatever reason, and she'll say, okay, I'm not going to fight it. If he loves me, I'll accept that. She's not going to say, why did you start loving me? Did the other deal fall through? And start making all sorts of fuss. And she doesn't do that. She's too smart. When she sees that you're back home doing the right thing, she doesn't knock you down. If she has any self-confidence herself. Now, if she has no self-confidence, she will think, you're only there for a short time. You only came back for a short time. You weren't really going to stay. You're just going to give her a hard time, making her think that you're coming back and then going away again. Now, see, that's sick thinking. And that's the kind of thinking that people who have a tremendously bad relationship have. They have that bad thinking about themselves and about others. Irene Merkley, I have some pictures of her. She is a nurse in Switzerland. And Irene just had a miserable life as a child. And she grew up with a lot of hang-ups. And then, at one point in her life, she became a very competent nurse. And she dealt with the elderly who were dying. And as she dealt with these people, she would always say, you know, whatever you choose to do, you can do, and life's okay. You can live or die, whatever you want to do. And I said, Irene, you're not happy doing what you're doing. She says, no, I'm not. I said, you are a nice person. You are the kind of person who teaches people to love themselves. She says, I am. I said, Irene, you're a clown. You're a silly clown. She says, well, I like to play like that. And so she started acting like a clown. And she'd go into these people who were dying, and she'd act like a clown. She had to take her hypodermic needle and give them a shot in the butt or do whatever had to be done because she was a nurse. But then she would treat them like a clown. And she'd say, well, are you deciding that you're going to live this week or are you going to die this week? Are you going to live next week or are you going to die and maybe a year or two from now, maybe 5 years from now, or maybe you're never going to die? What are you going to do? And act real silly. And then she bought this at the clown store, a red nose. It's a styrofoam nose that's red. So she stuck it on her face. And she said, I smell something in here. I smell something stinky. What's going on? And I don't smell anything. Oh! You know what it is? Just a minute. And then she reaches into the top of their head and she pulls it out. And she pulls it out. And she, you know, makes a show of pulling it out. Pulling it out. Pulling it out. Walking across the room, pulling it out. She says, oh! This is your attitude about yourself that's so stinky. Your attitude that you don't like yourself. Do you want this attitude back? No. May I throw it away? Yeah. See, they believe what she's doing. They play the game with her. And she says, can I dump this into the trash? And they say, yes. No. I'm going to dump it down the sewer. And she goes in the bathroom, flushes the toilet. And then she comes back and she said, now, tell me what you want to do. You want to live or you want to die? You want to be happy? What do you want to do? And they change their mind. They can live. They can die. It doesn't matter whether they live or die. I mean, they're old people and they've lived their life and they've already signed their will and they're done with everything. But their body is still alive. So why not enjoy it? So she tells them to enjoy their body, enjoy their life, and they go on enjoying their life. She helps them to put the right attitude in mind for themselves by being silly. So then she goes to clown school. Spent 2 solid years in clown school, night after night after night, working during the day, clown school at night. And the people in clown school didn't like her clowning because she was too silly. The clowns are supposed to be very serious and clowns are supposed to be different than she was. And I said, you go to that school and you learn everything they have to teach you, and then when the school is over, you go do your thing. But at least you have taken all the information they have to give you. So she did. And then she went out and did her own thing. And she went out, and Stephen Stressley had a book that he wrote, quite a remarkable book. And he wanted her to come and perform at his book signing party. He gave a book signing party at a bookstore. And so she came, dressed like a clown. And she did a miserable job. She was a miserable clown because she was performing for Stephen, her buddy. She was performing for people she knew. She was performing for all these people and trying to make them laugh. And when she came away from it, she said, "Boy, I was a flop." She wasn't really, because people did laugh. But she didn't get the laughter she thought she should get. So then she redid her attitude about herself. And she said, "I am doing this for myself." So she went to her mother, who was in a rest home, and she said to her mother, "You know, you're fantastic." And she put a red nose on her mother and had a picture of the two of them taken. Her mother did a flip-flop, did a complete change from the type of woman she was. She was a woman who was kind of angry, very unhappy with life. And what happened? This woman fell in love with one of the men in the rest home. And he was a former concert singer, an opera singer. And he would come in and sing to her and everybody else. And then she was starting to learn how to be a clown. And so she would play that role. And of course, Irene would come in and be the clown. And Irene would be the catalyzer, putting them together. But help them to change their attitude about themselves, change their way of thinking about themselves, realizing they could do any. She was not a clown for performing. She was a clown for having fun. And she was dealing with these people who were dying, and she was a clown for having fun. You know, the people, the kids of the people who were dying didn't like her. The children, the families of the dead, people who were dying, they didn't like her. You know why? Because their mother or father decided they weren't going to die. They're going to live. And they were expecting their will, and they were expecting their share of the inheritance, and they were just waiting on it, and they were staying in town because they thought surely Mom was going to kick off. They had her funeral dress out there hanging on the wall, and Irene comes in and says, "Take that silly thing down. When you die, it's time enough to bring that thing out. Meanwhile, you're living. Put on your happy frock. Put on your happy cloak, you know." And she had them living a lot longer. A lot longer. I don't know if she counted the years, but she had them living a lot longer. But she learned to like herself and be a clown. And then she had relationships in her life that were a little bit tough. And when she looked at them like a clown would look at them, poof. If it works, fine. If it doesn't work, fine. I don't care. And she had a beautiful little convertible, and it gave up the ghost. It died. And so she went to the dealer, and she saw another beautiful car there, a convertible, just like she had, but newer. And it was gorgeous, a little Saab. And she fell in love with it and bought it. Now here she is in Switzerland, where snow is going down and rain is coming down. The weather is inclement. It's not convertible weather, but she drives with her top down. And she has such good fun driving everywhere with the top down. And you know what she also does? She takes her old lady in the car with the top down. And her mother would never have allowed it before, but now she was a different person. Her daughter treated her like a different person. It's absolutely fantastic. Life is filled with adventures for us if we want to live them. And you have the ability to do anything, to act any way. And do you think you could be a clown? Sure you can. Everyone does silly things, but do them on purpose. Do them on purpose. And when you do, everything is so much fun. I have a complete clown headset too, the nose and ears. Anita gave me a set of pixie ears that I put on my ears, and you look real crazy. And then we bought some hair, you know, plastic type hair that makes you look, and a hat, and it goes, phew, you know, like a hat from Humpty Dumpty or from Mad Hatter in Alice in Wonderland. But these are things. And why do you have these? Why do you try to be funny? You try to be funny because you're being yourself. The funniness is not necessarily yourself, but the funniness is what comes when you let go. When you let go trying to be serious, you let go trying to be serious because you don't need to be serious. Life is not serious. If you die, life doesn't care at all. Huh? If you live, life doesn't care. Whatever you do, life doesn't care. It's whatever you want to do, you do. So if you want to enjoy life, then stop being such a worrywart about it. You know, stop thinking that you're so important. You know? Sam thinks if he died, Sybil would be very heartbroken and worried and unhappy about it. And I say, don't worry about it, Sam. If you die, Sybil has already got 8 or 10 guys who would just love to be her partner. Yeah. Not that she'd say yes, but she has no problem with having people who are beautiful in her life. But she's not expecting you to leave. She's got plans for you. She's got big plans for you. And so stick around, she says. But this is what we all do. Now, how long will Sam live? As long as he wants to. If he wants to live a year, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, 100 years, he will live. And that's true. If he wants to live 100 years in his perfect body, he will. But if he doesn't, everything will happen and he'll die. If he needs a disease to die, he'll create a disease. If he needs an accident to die, somebody run him over, he'll die in an accident. Whatever it is, it doesn't matter. But if you choose to live, if you choose to be yourself and have fun, if life is a joy to you, if life is a charm to you. Now, our friend over here, Ethelbert, he got this photographer to come here, and he's paying the photographer to take your pictures. And this photographer has got buku cameras at buku money. Big, big money. You know, it's maybe, I don't want to say in your dollars because I'm saying it wrong, but it's expensive. They're not cheap cameras, and they're beautiful lenses and everything else. And he was using my camera, and he saw what my camera, a 2008 or 2028 up-to-date camera can do, and how you don't need a flash to bring beautiful pictures inside like this here. You already just get the light by the ambient light all around, and it's a marvelous camera. Here he is, a professional. He has everything. He is working every day, earning a living, you know, taking pictures and doing things like that. And he fell in love with my camera. He said, I want a camera like that. He said, we'll make arrangements for you to bring me one over, you know. And I don't care. But he wants a camera like that. Now, why does he want a camera like that? He can have anything he wants. He can go to Amazon.com and order one and they send it right to him, you know. Big deal. But he wants mine. And mine is the Canon 1000. And it is beautiful. It has an anti-shake portion to it. It has all sorts of things to it. It's a neat little camera. I paid something like, I don't know what it was, but several hundred dollars for it. And I'm not sure right now, and I don't want to really quote myself, but when I looked at it in Amazon.com later, it was something like $80. You know, the price goes right on down. I think, my God, I jumped the gun too quick there. I bought it too soon. But I could afford it, so I bought it. And I use it, and I'm enjoying it. And I'm taking it wherever I go, and it just does great pictures. And it's just tiny. And it has, I just have to remember to bring the charger along, which I didn't do this time. But it does wonderful. And this camera, I don't know if you're all familiar with the cameras, this is a motion picture camera. You can take video with it. I have a picture of Sam on here talking at the talk the other day and with the people behind him, and you can hear him talk and you plug that in and I can put it onto my video machine and you can hear it, and it's clear and loud and beautiful and fantastic. And I'm going to give them a set of this, and I've already given them a part of the set. But when you bring it up on your computer, if you just press the little button down below it, you'll hear Sam talking. How about that? So that's pretty nice. But you see, here, he is a professional photographer. He's a top-of-the-line photographer. He knows his business. He likes himself. But he also recognizes when something comes along that is really spectacular in doing what he wants to do. Getting pictures in dark areas where it's hard to get them. Getting pictures of people who are dark faces against dark backgrounds and have it light up and shine up. Just like when I was taking Peace's picture, you know. I was taking her picture and lighting it up, and she didn't smile for me. But I took a picture anyhow. And I got lots of lovely pictures of her. And she just really looked great. Because I tilted the camera just a little bit. That's the iPhone camera here from the telephone. And it worked just great for her. And other pictures I've taken have worked just great. I take pictures of Anita with this camera. And every picture I take of Anita, she looks like a queen. And every picture I take of me with this, I look like an ordinary person, you know. But it is just great. It is just stupendous. This is how it is for all of us. We can have all of these lovely things and really enjoy ourselves and find them wonderful. This life is just wonderful. I had another camera, which was the 900 series, and it fell down. And so I sent it in for repair. And they said, we can't repair it. We'll send you a new one. Send us $50, you know. So I sent them $50 and sent me a new one. And meanwhile, I had a birthday. And the girl said, well, we'll buy a camera. So they bought the 1,000 for me. And it was a number of $100. And now it is down. And I'm sure perhaps there's a newer model out, which does even newer things. But this can take about 10 hours of motion picture on the little chip that's in there. Really fantastic. All because it works on what? Digital. That's the latest thing. And you guys are the latest thing. Right now, you are on digital. You're digital what? What? Digital stem cells, right. You are on digital stem cells. And the digital stem cells are the latest. And you know they're the latest. Even though you read about it in National Geographic in July of 2005, you know, even though you lived it then, it's digital. It's new. It's beautiful. It's fantastic. And then here, what about this here? With all those cells, room for... It's 1/1,000,000th of the space that's taken up by all that stuff. 1/1,000,000th of the space. I mean, these things are unbelievable and great. So let us really learn to use this and speak our word in a positive way. All of you who have interviewed with me and we talked together or whatever you want to talk about, we had affirmations that we shared. And Sybil has brought back affirmations from campus of those that she thought were good. And I think she only got about a stack, maybe that thick, of affirmations. They're good. So she makes them available to you. But we're in a new generation. We are not yesterday. We are today. What affirmation do you want to use today about who you are? Do you want to say, I am ideal, I live in my ideal stem cells? I tell my stem cells what to do, and they dance out to do it. Can't you just imagine? Here you are. You're the director of your course. And this chorus are these stem cells. They're all dressed in tutus and that sort of stuff for ballet. And so you're saying, okay, stem cells, go. Here is the dance. And so they dance into my liver and they dance into my heart and they dance into my legs and they dance into the art of all that I am. And what do they do? What do the stem cells do to me? They make me whole and perfect. Isn't that wonderful? Yes. They make me whole and perfect. So I spend time talking to my stem cells, telling them what I expect. I take time. I don't have to actually see them. I see them mentally. because I don't have a special escalator going down into my brain, but I have an in my mind, I have my thought. So I tell my stem cells what I want them to do, and they do it. They do it eagerly, easily. They do not care one little bit whether it's practical or not. They don't care one little bit whether it's reasonable or whether it's logical. Here you are, born with a limited brain. Limited because you think you're limited. You think you're stupid, you know. You think you can never learn these things. And then you just talk to your stem cells and you say, "Hey, stem cells, I'm a genius. I'm a genius." And stem cells says, "Ooh, good. Stem cells, go through my brain and wash it out good and tell every cell in my brain that I'm a genius. Return it to its original purity and integrity. Tell my stem cells in my brain and let my stem cells in my brain be them that I'm a genius. I'm a genius. I'm a genius." And so you know that stem cells can do that. If I say to you, "I want you to go to the store and buy some bread." And so Sam says, "I won't." He says, "I'm going to a little shop, but I'm not going to the store." He says, "I'm going to stop by the side of the road with this little shop where they sell bread, where I always buy bread, and I'm going to buy bread there." "But Sam, I want you to go to the store." "Well, I'm going to the shop." "Sam, I want you to go to the store." "I'm going to the shop." "Sam, go to the store." "I'm going to the shop." And then Sam says, "Gee, Herb's all hooked up on this." So he says, "Herb, I'm going to the store." And I said, "Good." But he has just taken the name of his shop and changed it to store. So now he's going to the store, which was a shop before in his thought. But it always was a store because a store is where they sell things, right? Whether it's got a tent over it, whether it's got an iron roof, or whether it's got whatever. So he goes to that store and he buys the bread. Now, was it so tough for him to mentally readjust his thinking to say what I wanted to hear? The moment he stopped fighting me, he was able to get all the bread he wanted. And by the time he stopped fighting me and he went to the store, it was sold out. Yeah. Agree with your adversary quickly. "Okay, I'll go to the store. I know a place just down the street from my bread shop. It's called Bread Store. And I'll go to that bread store." And so you go to the bread store, and in the bread store, he doesn't have any fresh bread. He's just got old bread. And so you say to yourself, "Okay, I'll buy one loaf of old bread for Herb, and then I'll go to the shop and buy new bread for me." Would you do that? Agree with your adversary quickly. What difference would it make to you to throw away a loaf of old bread? What I'm saying to you is, we spend so much time fighting things because it's not our way, because it's not what we have chosen. And we have empowered the thing by fighting it and giving it power and giving it attention. Whereas if we just go along with it, just say yes to your adversary and say yes quickly, there's no more argument. I say, "Sam, go to the store and pick up some bread." Sam says, "Sure thing." And he goes to what he thinks is a store and picks up bread. And I'm happy and he's happy. He has agreed with his adversary. Now, he may not have thought of it as a store, but once I said it was a store, then he thought of it as a store and said, "No, it could be conceived like that." Look at Sam. Sam is a man, one. Sam is a father, two. Sam is a husband, three. Sam likes to eat, four. Sam, he likes to go to the seminars of the University of Healing that I teach, five. Sam is a very happy man all the time, six. Sam dresses well, seven. Sam is surrounded by beautiful people all the time, eight. So now, see the diverse personality we have here in Sam? And if I say, "Sam, what do you think? Do you want to go to the store and get something for us?" And he always called it a shop. So he said, "Sure, I'll go to the store and get something for you." but he goes to the shop. But he thinks of the shop as a store because that's convenient now. That's convenient for him to agree with his adversary quickly. And when he does, then life is really wonderful. Really, it's great. Ellen has this problem too. She's the proctor on campus and the CEO and all the other good things. Ellen sometimes goes to a store she's not familiar with, and none of the things work. She likes to go to Trader Joe's, which is a specialty store that she likes. And she goes to Trader Joe's, which is a specialty grocery store. Every time she goes into Trader Joe's, she meets some beautiful little children she talks to. She meets some people she talks to. It's just a lovely, harmonious place. And when she goes into another store, she doesn't feel comfortable there. She doesn't feel like talking to the people. People are probably just as nice as the other store, but she doesn't know them. She doesn't know the people in the other store either. But she feels that every time she goes into the other store, she's friendly. Now, we sometimes have to change our attitudes in our life. And when we change our attitudes, then we start having a new life that we're living. How do you change your attitudes about your stem cells? What are your stem cells doing for you? What are your stem cells saying about your body? What are your stem cells saying about your mind and about your future and about your past? What are your stem cells saying? Are they saying, you are the greatest? If they're not, I turn them in for new stem cells. Because they should all say, you're the greatest. They should all say, you're successful. They should all say, you're fantastic. This is what we want to teach them. This is what we want to live. This is what we want to be. And that's the only way to be. So let's move along here. All literature is 99% fantasy and 1% fact. Do you believe that? Anything you read in any magazine, in any book, in anything, is 99% fantasy and 1% fact. Ethelbert, in the magazines that he writes, in the things that he does, he thinks of what he'd like to write about. Now that's fantasy. And then he takes a fact and puts it there and writes about the fact as a fantasy. He makes the fact sound real, whereas it actually is a fantasy. Now, is he wrong in that? No. Is he having fun? Yes. Is that his world? Is it his right? Yes. Is it his magazine? Yes. I had a newspaper, a number of newspapers over the years, but I had each one of my newspapers be happiness newspapers. And things happened in the community that were not so good, but I didn't write it down. I wrote down the things that were happy and the people's names and where they lived and what they did. And everybody thought it was a happiness journal. And it was. It's very beautiful. You can be misunderstood, and you can be thought to be a wimp, but I told you the story, I think. My wife was one of my writers, and I sent her out on assignment to cover a strike. And one of the local industries in Newark was having a strike, the Peterbilt Company, who builds these Peterbilt trucks, these big old jobs. And so my wife is really a very gentle, sensitive, caring lady. She doesn't want to get involved in violence and nonsense. So she goes over to this Peterbilt company, and she walks right through the strike lines. You know, they should have knocked her down. She walks right through. Everybody let her do whatever she thought she wanted to do, you know. And she walks into the building, and she walked into the office of the president, and she said to the president, I'm here from the Newark Sun, which is a magazine, newspaper, and I want to do a story on the things that are going on here. He says, oh, no, not something. And she says, now, just a minute. You are news. Now, how do you want to be written up? As somebody who is uncooperative, as somebody who is cooperative? So he cooperated. And by the time she got done with the story, and he got done thinking it through with her, she wrote the end of the strike. Because she got him thinking on how positive his company was, and how fair they always were with their employees, and how proper they always were, and she just wrote about those things, got him thinking about those things. And we didn't recognize how great a story it was at the time, because it just was, it fit and it worked. She came home with pictures, and she came home and told me the story, wrote the story down. I said, that's nice. I didn't realize how terrible it was. I didn't realize how everyone was fighting and hitting each other with sticks at the strike scene, and how they were being just really tough. But my wife's name is Faith. And so she went in there with peace and faith in her heart. She expected to find it, and she found it. Oh, she had to dig a little bit, but she found it. And when she found it, then what happened? That was the call of the day. And so other newspapers would go in there and like the strike scene, like the hitting, and like the dumb stuff. But we liked the peace. And she took pictures of the president. She took pictures of the people outside who were now shaking hands with each other. The strikers and the striking, they were shaking hands with each other, and they all got along beautifully. Now, how does that work? How can things like that happen? Do you think that Faith lived in a body of stem cells that were harmonious and peaceful and good? Do you believe that she was untouchable by an environment that could be negative? Do you believe that she put causes in motion for herself, that everything was in divine order? Yes, she did. She did that, and she experienced that. Now, do you, do I, do we have the encouragement, the guts, the ability to stand up to appearances and speak our word for truth? Engelbert, he writes about fiction, fantasy, in A Truthful Thing. And people say, wow! He just does not include all the nonsense that goes on as people were finding themselves. He just includes the truth of how they found themselves, how they became aware of themselves. That's what Faith did. She wrote the story of truth. She didn't tell anything about the conflict. She said that the employees had gotten a new contract at Peterbilt, one of the most handsome contracts they'd ever had in their life, and they intended to increase production measurably. And they did. Peterbilt to this day is a big, famous company that is really powerful and really good. You can write your fiction or write your fantasy. And really, your whole life is fantasy. Do you have stem cells inside of you? Yes. Yes, you do. You have tons of stem cells. Are you using them? No, maybe not as much as you should. Could you? Sure. Will you? Sure. And are you doing it now? Yes. Are you a fabulous lady full of fabulous stem cells? Yes. Well, now, you appear as though you're getting aware of it. You appear as though you're not fully bloomed with your stem cells, but you're coming along good. You don't see that. You see yourself full bloom of stem cells. Now, is that fiction or is that fact? Well, now, some people might say, not yet, you haven't got it yet. But you do. When you go to get your driver's test and do your driver's license, do you consider the test done before you get there? You consider, you know how to take that test. You go down to take your driver's test, and you're ready for it. You're ready to pass that test as smooth as silk. You're not going to be nervous. You're not going to be upset because the instructor is asking you to do things. And you just go down and drive beautifully. Now, you have that license before you got it. And like I said to the photographer today, I said, when do you get your license? You know, you're going to be professional. And everybody says, oh, he is professional. Oh, I'm taking a joke here, you know. I'm saying, when will he get his license? And he plays the game. And he said, yeah, one of these days. One of these days. But meanwhile, I'm being paid pretty good for being just a beginner. And he is. He is, because he's a professional. The last time Engelbert took me out, what did we do? We had professional photographers around us too. And what did we do? They took pictures of us. And what did they do? I never saw them. But it didn't matter. I'm always me. But they saw them, and they may have even used them. They may have even put them on television. They may have even spread them all across the world. Do I care? I did them for me. And I do them for me. And I have these cameras here for me. I enjoy the pictures. And if the monks want to use it in our monthly magazine or in our gist or quarterly, then they can. They have them. And that's beautiful. Now, Sybil and her staff, all of you guys, are going to have to look at the pictures and tell me who these people are. So that when we write it up and put it in the magazine, we'll have your name spelled right. And we'll have you in the right order. And it'll be fun, right?
Yes.
So I'll put it on my chip and we'll put it on your disc and we'll run off a print of it and put the identification underneath it. Now, is that... That's a picture without identification. It's a picture of nobody. There's no names there. It's a picture that is pure fiction. It's not real. Then I give it to Sybil, and she makes it real by putting names under there. Now these fictional people who had no names have names, and they become real, very real. A moment before, they were not real. But there they are. No, they had no identity. If you don't have any identity, you're not real. You know that. Only when you have identity are you real. And are you allowed to do what your identity allows you to do. And that's the identity I want under our pictures. The real identity of who you are. And that's fun. That's always fun. Alrighty, now, whatever did we do to deserve to have so much fun together? I want to make sure I stay within our program here. Noon is lunch, right? Okay. So, can you see why 99% of everything is fiction and only 1% is true? And maybe that 1% is fiction too. You know? Maybe everything is fiction.
Yes.
Yeah. Now, do you know what he's saying? He is alluding to the fact that we are creators and that's a fiction. But that's true. We are creators and that's not a fiction. Okay? Now, what is he trying to say? That we can create fiction? Sure. We can create fact? Sure.
Yes.
Now, Sam needs to have glasses to read. So Sam puts them on. And then Sam sees these big words in front of himself. He takes his glasses off so he can read them because the words get too big. And so now they're legible. And that's why I put my articles in big type here, not in little tiny type, you know, you got to go like that to read them. And so it's wonderful. It's just wonderful. You are the creators of your world. You are the masters of your world. You are the creator of everything. Now, are you sitting here in this wonderful temple here? Are you sitting on the floor? Are you sitting on these wonderful meditation chairs? Deepak Chopra has a set of these chairs too, and he uses them in his operation. You know who Deepak Chopra is?
Yes.
Yeah. He's a popular writer, Hindu writer, on positive thinking. And he's a medical doctor and a few other good things. He's just one of these people into everything. Into everything. Does everything perfect, and then he goes on to something else. His father never could figure him out. His father's a medical doctor too. And his father decided, okay, I'll come over and visit. He saw what Deepak was doing and he says, I'll stay. He liked what he was doing. So we have another point here now. Newspapers are full of magic and how it changes the lives of people. But most of the time, I look only at the obvious. Yeah. What is the obvious? The obvious is that the car hit the tree. But that's not true. That's not true. That was only because of the sound effect. The car hit something, but not a tree. Maybe a bench or something. Or clang, clang, clang. And what's happened? Nothing. You go over and look at the car, it's untouched. It bumped a chair or something with its bumper, but nothing happened to it. But we felt that a big accident took place. I speak my word as I drive around the United States and the world, and I'm driving in the car and I hear a siren, and I say, all is in divine order, all is peace, all is harmony, all is in divine order, all is peace, all is harmony. And when I arrive at the scene of the peace and harmony, I may see a car on the lawn, spread across the lawn, people sitting there waiting for something. And I ask a bystander, I say, is everyone okay? Yeah. Why are they all sitting on the lawn? Well, they're waiting for another car. They messed up this one. It had a flat, you know, and pulled off the road. Oh, so everybody's okay. Yeah. All is in divine order. Yeah. Well, I said all was in divine order before I got here, so I'm the one who made it all in divine order, so you can be thankful for that. But I wonder, Herb, did you say it before the fact or after the fact? Did you say all is in divine order before the car didn't do what it didn't do? Or did you say all is in divine order after you heard the police siren and whatever did do happened? But it didn't happen because it wasn't real. It was a fictional idea in your mind. What is your belief? How do you believe in that? See, the world is a lot of fiction. And newspapers write fiction all the time. And they don't think that they're writing fiction. Many times I went down to the police department in various cities writing up the police reports of good things. And I would write down the names of the people involved. So then I'd put the paper to bed. And the next week, the people would call me up. That's not me. That's not me. That's my brother. That's not me. That was this. Well, whoever wrote up the report in the police report did not have it correct. Did not have the information correct. It was incorrect. It was wrong. Well, what is it that I can do? I cannot do anything. I have to write whatever they write down. And so I go to the police department and I say, these people called me and said that they were not doing, oh yeah, that's right, this is incorrect. We've changed it. You know, well, you didn't tell me. Well, that's your job to find out, you know. Okay, that's my job. So I won't tell you then anymore when they change things. Whoa, come on now, you've always kept us on toe. Well, you keep me on toe too. So, you see, they didn't want to take responsibility, but I required them to take responsibility. And so I made a correction in the newspaper. So-and-so was not involved. So-and-so was not involved in a problem. And so then half the town knew that so-and-so was involved. And now the other half of the town, who didn't know that you were involved, now know that you're not involved. And they wonder what you were involved in that you were not involved in. And so when you write that down, you get into a lot of trouble. I tell people, you are better off not asking for a correction in the newspaper. Because if you get a correction and anybody missed whatever was said, they will think something about what's happening. But if you have a correction and it makes you feel better, I'll just write it on a slip of paper for you and give it to you and sign it from the paper. But to publish it is like publishing twice the error, publishing twice the problem. These are very, very important things. Things that we want to learn how to put into motion for ourselves. That we do not need to have people say nice things about us. We only say nice things about ourselves. And the nice things don't have to be true. The little boy running in the house saying, Mommy, there's a million kids chasing me. Mommy goes outside and there's two kids. Did the kid think that there was the whole world against him, that everybody's chasing him, that everybody gave him a heart? Yes. And when he went in the house, told his mom, and they went out and looked together, saw just two people there, she said, okay, let's invite your two friends in, and we'll have some cookies and some ice cream or cake or whatever, we'll have something to eat. And so they're invited in, and the thousands of people, millions of people who were chasing him are no longer there. Was that true that they were chasing him? In his mind, they were. In your mind, you go through a lot of fictional ideas which are not true. And you report it. You report it to whomever you're involved in. And these people say, oh, is that right? Is that right? And they laugh a little bit, but it's true. It's true. you actually believed that everybody was chasing you. Yeah? What does the... we'll get that in a minute. What does a criminal think? A criminal is not caught yet. What does he think?
He thinks he's a good guy.
I'm sorry?
He thinks he's a good guy so long as he's not caught.
He hates...
He sees himself as good. Every criminal.
The criminal thinks everything is good?
That he is good.
No, the criminal is worried that he's going to be caught. He's always looking over his shoulder because he's done something wrong. He's always afraid that somebody's going to catch him for something. And if they're not going to catch him for what he did, they'll catch him for what he didn't do. And they'll just pan it on him. But the thing is, that's all fiction. Nobody's chasing after him. Nobody knows that he did something wrong yet. Nobody knows that he robbed the bank. You know, nobody knows that he was a naughty boy. And when they know it, see, that he lives a life of fiction, as most of us are living a life of fiction 90% of the time. But we say here 99% of the time. Very interesting how we live our lives, how silly we are, and how unrewarding it is to live your life like that. Okay, here we come with our next point there. I write the story of my life daily, in how I instruct my stem cells to function in my mind, body, in my world, and my universe. You do. I write the story of my life daily. How do you write the story of your life daily about what the stem cells are doing in yourself? How do you write it? How the stem cells are affecting you. How do you write it? Do you write it from the obvious? Do you write it that things are working out for you or are not working out for you by whatever is happening to you? Or do you write it with fiction? Do you say, I want a new job? Okay, what kind of job do you want? I want a job working in a company. Okay, you're working in a company. What kind of company do you want to work in? So, you see, fiction, you're thinking of all the possibilities you might have. This fiction is not real. It may be real. It may become real. You may be listening to your inner light, which knows all things, and it may be revealing it to you. And you say, I got the inspiration to go over and knock at that company's door. So you go over and knock at the door, and there's nobody there. They have the day off. You say, what kind of a inspiration is that? Well, you think, what kind of inspiration? Well, the next day you go and try again. And there's everybody there. And they say, oh, yes, we were on a company picnic. Yes, I was looking for a man of just your talents. When can you start? Oh, wonderful. I need you right now. You see how that goes? When you think fictionally, your fiction becomes fact. And when you think fictionally, your fiction becomes an expression of exactly what you believe about yourself. Now, is that where you were with your question?
Can facts become fiction?
I'm sorry?
Can facts become fiction?
Can fact cause fiction?
Become fiction.
Of course.
Huh?
Of course.
Yes.
What is fiction? Fiction?
Fictions are ideas.
Ideal.
Ideas.
Idea.
Yeah.
Fact is the ideal, and fiction is the fabric of our imagination. Now, what is real about fiction?
Imagine what is real.
There's nothing real about fiction. When you have a fictional story of your life and you live it, it's fact. But it's not the fictional story of your life.
Yes.
So, if you're living your fictional story of your life, is no longer fiction, is it? If you have a fictional story of your life and you live it, then it's fact. If you have a fictional story of your life and you live it, first day, you got that point?
Yes.
Then it is fact. Okay, now, if you have a factual story of your life,
I don't believe it.
and you don't live it, then it's fiction. You see, we play that game with ourselves. And that's what we're playing with ourselves when we say that we speak our word about affirmations. I'm home perked. You know, we mess up. We make a charade out of it, make a game out of it, and it's not true. It's a silly and silly thing to do. You say I'm home perked, and you act like it. You act like you're holding perfect. You carry yourself like you're holding perfect. If your toe hurts, you say, my toe is perfect, my toe is perfect. And you carry yourself. You don't stop walking because your toe hurts. You put the cause in motion. You act like it and you live it. And then you have it. But you see, the word fact and fiction are fun words. They're fun words insofar as we like fiction. And basically, we're not too interested in fact. We really aren't. Do you like me? Now, is that a fact or a fiction? And are you merely trying to make me feel good by saying that you like me? When I ask you, do you like me? You know? And could you like me? Maybe. Would you like me if you had a chance? I don't know for that. I have so many people that I like, I don't have to take on any new ones. But you see, this is how we do these things. You know? How do you go back to the original of what you did, which is what you did? You went back to the original of who you are and what your thought is. And then you went back to it and you found out that you weren't living it. So what your fact was not fact. It was fictional.
What you're trying to say is that...
What's that?
I mean, what you're trying to say is that all affirmation will make, without it backing into it, walk.
Everything.
Everything.
Now, why am I trying to get you to recognize that everything is fiction? Because I want you to do what Peter is doing. Peter is learning how to play the game. Now, if I say to you, there'll be a car for you out in front of the office in 2 minutes. Please be ready for it. You say, okay, so you get up, grab your purse, and go out the door. And you stand there. An hour goes by, no car. You come back in, you say, there was no car there. Well, I believe there was a car there. For me, there was a car there. That you didn't get the car, I don't know how that is. But for me, I would have got the car. And then you say, well, what went on here? What's going on? So then, as you think, you say, maybe there was another point of view. Maybe there's another information. Maybe there are other facts there. The fact is, I forgot to call the cab. And I told you he'd be there in a minute. Or I forgot, I called the wrong cab. I called the yellow cab next door to Sam's house. And I should have called, I called the yellow cab next door to the other side of town instead of calling it right here. So if I call the yellow cab from right here, it would be here in a minute. But the one from across town has to drive all the way across town, and maybe he might not get here. He might pick up a fare along the way that'd be much more lucrative for him. So how does fact stay fact and fiction become fact or fiction be fiction? You can say, I called, but you cannot say, it's here, unless you believe it's here. And what would happen to you if you believed something was so that wasn't so? What would happen to you?
I would not be happy.
She will not be happy.
I will not feel fine.
You have the ability to do both. And you
but
do.
In most cases, you know, if I feel or I expect for something to happen, it doesn't happen. I just see it as divine love.
Well, my whole theme in working with you on this seminar is getting you to realize that you are the creator of your own fact and your own fiction, and that it can be anything you want, and your fiction can be a lie and your fact can be a lie.
Yes. Yes.
And yes,
if one tells a lie,
what
if I tell a lie?
If you tell a lie
that is not challenged,
That is not what?
Not challenge. Not challenge.
Not challenge.
Challenge.
Yeah, okay.
It becomes a fact.
Yes.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
To you.
To me.
Yeah. Well, you you cannot...
Knowledge is simple, but
yeah, it's simple.
You cannot build logic into something that you say is a lie, because you already said it's a lie.
No, I'm just saying.
You said, if I tell a lie, didn't you say that? Or you say, if I told the truth?
But if I tell lies.
That's what I said, if you tell a lie.
And it's not challenged. I mean, I tell lies in public. And within me, I know it's a lie. And other people may know it's a lie, but they did not challenge it. It becomes truth. No?
One conversation at a time here. Now, Peter, you were saying what?
No, I'm just repeating what he's saying. I said he has claimed that it's a lie by himself. Therefore, it becomes a lie.
Well, a lie is always a lie. If we're going to say a lie is a lie, a lie is something that is not truth.
Yes.
But the thing is, it may be truth and you don't know it, and then it's not really a lie, but it's a lie to you, and you act upon it as a lie. Yes.
You see, the point. I think the point that we have to understand here, from what you are saying, is that since we are the creator of everything, both the lie and the truth, we can make the truth to become a lie, and the lie can, we can make the lie become truth. God told Isaiah to tell Hezekiah that he should arrange his life, that he was going to die. And then Hezekiah prayed to God, and God heard his prayer. As Isaiah was going out, God told him again, go and tell that man, I've added 15 more years into your life. Did God lie? So the point is that because he is the creator of everything, he has created, he has decided to change the fact to a lie, or the lie to the fact. Because he had all the power. Isaiah didn't die, I mean his guy didn't die again after 15 years. So is there a lie, or did God lie? So they are all what you are talking about. We have the power to do anything. Therefore, it's not easy to distinguish.
You think he believes that? You think he believes we have the power to do anything?
Yes.
You think he does?
Yes.
You really think he does?
Yes.
Now, why do you think he does? Because he sold you on it. He sold you on the idea that he can do anything. And he's right. But he sold you on that idea. Did you think that before? Well, before he said that, did you think about him being able to do anything he wanted to do? No. Before, just a moment before, you did not believe that he could do anything. Do you think he could raise the dead and heal the sick, and he could walk the streets of Jerusalem on the lake or the river? He can. But the thing, it must be his choice. But you believe it because you are now at the David Copperfield show and you're watching the magic man and he's doing magic and you think, wow, that's wonderful. Interesting. Yes. Your belief in yourself makes what you say true. And your belief in yourself makes what you say not true. You see, the thing is, about your believing in yourself makes it real for you. And anybody else believing in yourself makes it real for you. And you can have whatever you want. But the thing is, if you believe it, it's yours. And if you don't believe it, even if it's true, it's not for you. It doesn't work for you. Now, is your photographer going to make a big charge for all these extra pictures? What's your thought? No. He's going to be very reasonable and very fair, and he's going to say, this is what. He said, just the privilege of meeting Dr. Barley was enough to say, I do it all gratis. Yes. Is that true?
Yes.
Yeah. Now, you see, that could be a lie. That could be a lie, or it could be true. Now, you give him the opportunity to make it true or make it a lie. what is he going to do? You are the creator of your world, and you create outrageously. You create your wildest dream. And the wilder the dream, the better the creation. The wilder the dream, the more believable the creation. So let's just look at this last point here. I stop reading fiction and read the story of my life thus far and delight in its magic. I read the story of my life thus far and delight in its magic. I was talking with our friend here, and what did he tell me? He told me the story of his life. He told me the story of Mike's father, who is 100 and some years old. He told me the story that his father is a minister, and he showed me a picture of Mike's family and his father and his other relatives. He showed me the picture now. He told me his father still lives. His father's over 100. He still lives. Well, is that true or not? Is his father in a coma? No. Is his father running around playing tennis? No. What's his father doing? What's his father doing? His father is probably reading a book, enjoying himself, doing whatever he's doing. But you see, we create the fiction, and we create the fantasy, and we create the fact. Do you think that the story that we told you about the Big Bang Theory, one little atom bursting open and playing its game, that that was real? What did we call it? We called it a theory. And he called it a theory. And a theory is something, maybe, that could be, maybe not. Now, what is the statement that you've heard? If enough people believe it's true, it is true. Have you heard that statement?
Yes, it's true.
Is that true?
Mm-hmm. But there's more people who believe it's true.
Mm. Is that true? Think about it. If enough people believe it, it's true. Well, it's not. It's not. We have these statements and we think that that's true, and it's not. We are in charge. We are in charge. And we're the creator of our world. And we are the ones who make fiction out of fact and fact out of fiction. So let's plan on giving it a little more attention, and we'll consider our last two points today, and we'll bring that up and speak a little more about it. And if you have any questions, bring it up in our question hour, which we'll have next. Okay? I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.
I love you.